Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming. We might start. I don't know how many of you went to the previously advertised room in Building 10, but congratulations if that was you. My name's Tamsin Peach, and I'm wired for sound because we are making a recording of this for people in non-Sydney campuses who might also want to listen to it. So thank you for joining us, listeners. I am the New South Wales Secretary for the Rhodes Scholarships. So my job is to oversee the selection process, to distribute information to potential candidates, to work with the selection committee on the selection each year. And I'm also the director of the Australian Centre for Public History at UTS, which is why you're here, as opposed to on any other campus. Please take a seat. And I have a role being a network advisor at UTS as well for the Rhodes, but you'll find out more about network advisors later as people who might be able to help you with your application. I am also a Rhodes Scholar, and I went. I did my undergraduate degree at Adelaide University, and then I was awarded a Rhodes Scholarship in 2003, one of the Australia at Large scholarships, and I went to Oxford where I did first a master's degree and then a DPhil, which is what Oxford call their PhDs. And then I stayed on, I did a postdoc there, I got a job in London as an academic. I came back to Sydney University for a while. I know there's lots of Sydney Uni people here where I was. And recently, last year, I moved to UTS. So you can ask me anything about that later. There'll be times for questions all the way through. I wondered if we could begin with just a little survey. So I know there's a lot of people from Sydney Uni. Who's from Sydney Uni? Who's not from Sydney Uni? Welcome. I think the Vice Chancellor at Sydney University wrote to a lot of people, so hence the flooding. And also, you're just up the road. So it's very good that the mountain comes to Muhammad for once. Who is doing a degree that might be called humanities or social sciences? Great. Who is doing a degree that might be called medical? Yep. Health sciences, medical, yep. Law? Yeah, oh, two. Wow. What else do we have? Maths? Physics? Yep, great. Fantastic. That's a good distribution. I love the humanities people in the room. Creative practice. Yay! Okay, so Oxford, I thought I'd begin by telling you a bit about what the Rhodes Scholarship is. Some of you probably know a lot about it. Some of you might not know much at all. So forgive me if I step you through what it is and talk a little bit about what the Rhodes Scholarships fund, and then pretty swiftly move on to eligibility, selection criteria, stuff that might be really useful to you, and we'll break for questions all the way through. And if you actually have a question, just shove your hand up and I'll answer it immediately. So the Rhodes Scholarships were founded in 1901 by the arch-imperialist Cecil Rhodes, who earned a lot of money fighting the South African War and setting up diamond mines in Rhodesia, what's now Zimbabwe. And that money he used to set up a foundation which funded what is now 100-plus scholarships which draw students from all across the world and fund them to do study at Oxford. And so they have been running since 1902-ish. And they've sort of become known as the premier global scholarship. And you probably have heard of perhaps the Fulbright or the Gates Foundation, or more recently the Schwarzman in China. And these are all scholarship schemes, or Australia's own Sir John Monash Foundation scholarships. These are all schemes that are founded directly on copying the Rhodes scheme. So in talking about the Rhodes, and I'm, you know, interested in getting as many people to apply for the Rhodes as possible, also think about these other schemes, because they basically have exactly the same selection criteria. And their dates are usually in the second half of the year for application. They are, all of the non-Rhodes scholarships don't have the age cutoff. So they're really, and they fund you to go to these great international universities as well. And so it's, when you think about applying for the Rhodes, think about these other scholarships in the same breath, because they will, in many ways, help you achieve the same thing. Yes? Sure. These are the ones that come to mind, but there are others, yeah? So the Fulbright. Fulbright was an American senator who founded a scholarship scheme after the Second World War. The Sir John Monash Foundation, which is for Australian students to go to Oxford or Cambridge, Monash. That should be top of your list. The Gates Foundation scholarships, they tend to be much more academically focused and they take you to Cambridge. The Schwarzman, which is, a 1 or 2 year scheme that takes you to China. And did I say another one? There's also the Menzies, which is a scheme very, very few people apply for, and you should all think about that as well. But there's a bunch of others. Clarendon, you know, and actually, if you're all at the University of Sydney, the University of Sydney Scholarships homepage has a list of a lot of these on it, as does UTS. And So your scholarships office should be able to help you with those. So the Rhodes was founded in 1901, and hello, welcome, sit down. And it was initially really, it's geography mapped students from the British Empire. But since the Second World War, that footprint has expanded massively. So it's recently launched scholarships in China. I think Brazil is next on the list, Palestine, etc. So one of the remarkable things about the Rhodes Scholarships is that you become a cohort with these amazing people from all over the world. Now, all of those constituencies run their own selection processes. It's centralised, you know, there's a common selection criteria, but should you be awarded the Rhodes Scholarship from New South Wales, you would be known as the New South Wales Rhodes Scholar for 2018. In Australia, there is a scholarship for each of the states, and then there are three what is called Australia at Large scholarships. And what happens is that a scholar is selected in the selection process from each state, but then usually two runners-up are sent on to a national process where also people who live in Canberra apply to, and or the Northern Territory. And there's a second process there, which selects another three scholars. So Australia sends in total 10 scholars every year as part of this 100-plus cohort of more. So Rhodes will fund pretty much any, there are one or two slight exclusions. Degree, please come in, there's seats at the back, you know. Any degree that Oxford offers, that includes if you wanted to do a second BA degree or a second bachelor's level degree. There are a few bachelor's level degrees at Oxford that are really popular for students to do, even though they've got a degree already. And one of them is called PPE, Politics, Philosophy and Economics. And it's a degree that pretty much everyone in the British Parliament has done. And as somebody that already has an undergraduate degree from one of these constituencies, usually you're exempt the first year. So you go and do the second 2 years of that degree and you get a full degree. So, you know, people often don't think about that as part of the package. But, you know, if you're interested in that sort of a set of subjects, it's a good thing to think about. But there's also many master's programs, which are 1 year programs, but there's some 2 year programs as well. And then there's the doctoral degree, a DPhil. Now, if you have done a bachelor's degree in journalism or creative writing, and you go to Oxford and you look up the list of degrees, you probably won't find those degrees on there. But there is the Ruskin School of Art. There are other ways that Oxford offers that program. So don't think too linearly about what you might want to do there, right? So that might be something you can talk to your network advisor, which we'll come to in a minute, about what you see. What Rhodes funds? Rhodes funds your fees. So as a foreign student, you would be paying foreign student fees, which are quite substantial. They fund your living expenses. So your living expenses, and you get a sort of stipend for spending beer and books. And they do that for 2 years with the option to extend for a third. So it's an extremely generous scheme, really. And, you know, then there are like lots of different pots that often let you do a fourth year as well if you want to, like me, and I did a 1 year master's and 3 years PhD. So I was able to cover my fourth year expenses with lots of local bits of money. You shouldn't worry about that. If you're in a couple, or married or partnered, there are couples accommodation options available. But one thing about Oxford, which is very particular to Oxford and Cambridge universities, and it's important to kind of get your head around, is that you have to get admission to the university, but you also have to get admission to the colleges. So Oxford, in ancient times, in the old and old and olden days, you would go and study at the feet of a master, and over time, I'm talking like 12th century, and over time, communities of scholars formed around those masters, those teachers. So they became residential communities with all of the teaching offered through those residential communities and exams set centrally by the university. And basically Oxford, basically Oxford still operates like that at an undergraduate level. It means there's compulsory residence in a college. Now at undergraduate level, all of your teaching really is done through your college as well. And what the university only does is coordinate lectures so that you can rock up to attend anybody's lecture and set the exams. At graduate level, faculties have sort of flowered in the last 50 to 60 years, and there's laboratories, and graduate level teaching tends to be done through the faculties, but you still have to live in a college. So this is not really relevant at this stage in the process. If you are successful, you will then have to pick a college, and you know that's when you would absolutely come and talk to me and we can talk about that. But in terms of getting your head around Oxford, it's always this dual identity. So I was at New College, which is about 800 years new, which was great. So that's what, when I say Rhodes pays your living expenses, it pays your college fees, which include often food, although as a graduate you'll have cooking facilities, and your rent. So is there any questions at this stage about Oxford and what the Rhodes is? Yes.
Citizenship, does that affect anything?
Not really. I mean, Rhodes will love you because your fees are lower, but it doesn't really affect the selection process in any way. No.
I was reading that you could leave off a college, but you have to be within like 10 miles of the university. Is that true?
That's true, yeah. So you have to be, there are some exceptions to that rule that I stated categorically, but 90% of students will live in college in their first year, and then in their second year, third year, you can move within 10 kilometres. And it's also a really good thing to do because that's how you meet a lot of people as well in your college. Yep.
So you mentioned you have to apply for the uni and then college, right? I mean, that's the thing. Do you have to apply to multiple colleges?
So all of this you shouldn't necessarily worry about at the moment, because you apply first for the Rhodes Scholarships. That gives you the money total. And then me and the rest of the Rhodes team will step you through applying for the degree program and your college. And that all comes after you're awarded the funds. So, you know, it's useful information for those other schemes and also for generally thinking about Oxford. But in this process, you don't need to worry about that yet. Yep, and then there.
Can you apply for both Cambridge and Rhodes?
Rhodes will only take you to Oxford.
But you can apply for the Cambridge gates to go to Cambridge, yep, and also apply for Rhodes for Oxford, yeah?
Yeah, okay. Yep. You just got to pay attention to the cutoff dates, because, yep. Yep.
Is there a minimum year that the course that you want to do has to be, like, for instance, I'm looking into maybe architectural history, postgraduate certificate, which is only around 11 months, or master's in fine arts, which is 1 year? Does it have to be like a two, you have to go for 2 years?
You'd be expected to do 2 years. Like, obviously, life situations change, you know, and some people have to leave after 1 year. But you would be expected, you could do 2 1-year degrees. Yeah. But you would be expected to do 2 years. That would be usual. And it would be unwise to say you wouldn't be doing that in your application. Yeah. Was there another question? Okay. So, I'm going to talk through now some of the eligibility criteria and the selection criteria. This website, which is ticking away in the background, you should all know about. I don't know, how many people have been to this website already? Good people, that's why you're here. Now, you will know, so if you just Google Rhodes Scholarship Supply, you'll get here top of the list, yep. So what you need to do here is come down and select country. These are all the regions in which scholarships are awarded. We get pretty quickly to Australia. This is the national team that administers the scholars. If you go to information for candidates, you'll hit this document, which should be your Bible at the moment. But we'll just go back here for a second to this page. If you click here, state or territory honorary secretaries, and we go to New South Wales, you'll hit me and Jen Martin as well. And then we have a list of network advisors. We've just got some recent new appointments as well. University of Sydney is in the process of selecting somebody. So I suggest you contact Pip Patterson's office and barrage them and suggest they might like to appoint a network advisor sooner rather than later. But you've got my contact details as well there, and Jen Martin's. So if we go back here, there is also this document here, Guidance for Referees, which you should also read, but I will come to that a bit later, I think. So, you'll see here, actually, we'll just skip down to eligibility criteria first. Now, this is... These are the sort of basic entry-level requirements to think about whether you should bother spending your time on this. You must be an Australian citizen. If you're a dual citizen, that's fine, but you must be an Australian citizen who has been resident for at least 2 of the last 10 years in Australia, and you must have completed at least 2 years of your schooling in Australian secondary school. If you don't meet those criteria, you may be able to apply through a kind of, there's a global scholar, you know, everyone that doesn't fit all the other boxes scheme. But you should apply through this if you meet these criteria. And then the very important one is the age criteria. At the moment, you must not have passed your 26th birthday by the 1st of October this year. So if you are going to be 26 on the 1st of October this year, that means you're unfortunately ineligible for the Rhodes. And you should listen to what I've said, but direct your energies very forcefully at those other schemes I mentioned, which do not have the age criteria. If you are going to miss the age cutoff next year, if this is your last year of applying, then that concentrates your mind a lot. You get to apply twice. Right, so that's also very useful to think about in terms of a strategy. You must have completed, most of you I suspect will meet this criteria because you've got first class honours degrees, but if you have a master's degree, it has to be either at level 9 or 9E, and it has to meet the Australian qualification. You have to have attained a AQF level 8 standard. So if you if you're not straightforwardly a first class honours student, you've got to probably think through those other requirements again with your network advisor or the education office, Pitt Patterson's office. Yep.
If you fulfil the first class honours requirement, in your experience, should you also have undergraduate marks that reflect a HD average?
So you've got first class honours? Oh, well, if you did. You know, we'll come to this a little bit when we talk about selection criteria. So this is just cut off. You're not eligible to put your application in if you don't meet these criteria. So that sort of fits into the selection criteria, what committees are going to value, how they're going to understand your CV. So yes, you're absolutely eligible to submit in that context. And I think a trajectory that shows your marks have gone like that, if you can tell a story about that, is great, it's fine. But we'll talk about that when we think about how you, what committees are looking for in the selection and how we meet, particularly the leadership selection criteria. Yep. All right, I think we'll move on swiftly because it's 6 o'clock. So we have been talking just now about selection criteria, but I wanted to draw your attention to the date, the cutoff date, which is the 14th of September. And applications have to be submitted via the online system, and they involve six referees. And the six referees also have to submit their references by that date. So you would be well placed to read that PDF I referenced earlier about advice for referees and start contacting your referees now. There are some conditions and suggestions about what sort of referees you should get. That document goes into them, so does this. You can absolutely have referees from your school. In fact, it used to be very advisable that you have your high school principal submit a reference. It might be on the other document. I think it's on the other document. We'll come to that later. But let's just park thinking about referees now as an important thing to do. So we come to the selection criteria, which is listed here under background information, but it's listed further on as selection criteria. Now, you will all be here because you meet the academic excellence criteria, right? Great, well done. If you have been awarded, this is the other reason that having a degree in hand really helps. If you've been awarded prizes for coming top of your year, the university medal, school prizes, those are things that really make a big difference. So think about what those are. Thesis prizes, they help mark you out as coming at the top of your cohort. And that's what the committees will be looking at in terms of academic excellence. But then there are these, so that's one criteria. Then there are these three other criterias, which, as I say, the other schemes have really copied. They're expressed very oddly in Rhodes' language because this is taken from Cecil Rhodes' will in 1901. But I will translate them for you, which is the real juicy bits about why you're here. Energy to use your talents to the full, as demonstrated by mastery in areas such as sport, music, debate, dance, theatre, artistic, etc. So this used to be the sports category of the Rhodes, where you had to be, I don't know. When I got to Oxford and I met with my PhD supervisor, she said to me, "Are you a sporty one or a clever one?" So it used to be sport. But since the 80s, and this isn't as well known as it should be, that has been taken much more widely to include any extracurricular activities, yeah? So music, debate, dance, theatre, artistic pursuits, anything that shows, one, that you're not just a bookworm, that you've got a life and a personality outside your studies, and two, stuff that sports demonstrated, like working in a team, dedication, discipline, getting up, doing something that's hard, often losing but still doing it anyway. These are all qualities that are demonstrated by those other these other activities. If you're, you know, music or debating or drama or journalism, you know, student newspaper. So think broadly about how you might meet that criteria. And you'll see here, these are things that you can also, if you're at the younger end of the age spectrum, you can think about how you might enhance some of these aspects of your profile. I mean, and I have to say, these will stand you well in whatever you do next, you know, in terms of whatever job you're going for. Being able to speak to these four criteria will be a massive, massive asset. Then there is truth, courage, devotion to duty, sympathy for the weak, kindness, unselfishness, and fellowship. This is assessed as community service. Yeah? So community service, again, can sometimes be connected to paid employment. It doesn't have to be stuff you've done for free, but it's stuff that you, has led you to engage beyond the narrow confines of perhaps your instrumental degree program, and it's not just something you do for fun. Yeah? And that, and it connects quite closely to the fourth criteria, which is, I think, the hardest to get your head around. It's the one that wraps all of them together, and it's the one that really makes a difference in selection committees. And that is essentially leadership. Moral force of character, instincts to lead, and take an interest in your fellow human beings. So when you're thinking through what this actually means, this is a way to think about it. What are some of the big issues, the challenges that face us as a community in Sydney, a community in Australia, a community across the globe? What are those? How can you articulate what some of those are? And how do you see yourselves as helping to meet those challenges? Now, you don't have to, obviously, you know, someone might come and say, climate change. You don't have to solve climate change for the whole world. You might be interested in urban development in Western Sydney. You might say, see that as a major issue for what it means to live in Australia in the 21st century. And then how you see yourself, what degree you want to do at Oxford, what you want to do after Oxford, will be about meeting that challenge. And also your previous history, your community service, your extracurricular activities, and even sometimes your academic work will also be part of the story of how you are engaging with that issue already. So committees want to know, why should we invest in you? Yeah? What makes you one of the world's leaders fighting the world's fight? A, you have to be able to articulate what that means, and B, you've got to be able to articulate what you, how you see yourself in it. So this is where, if you've got twists and turns in your biography, they're great, but you've got to be able to tell a story about them, about what happened. If you were doing one degree and then you switched degrees and did another, what happened there? If your marks have shown continual improvement, why? You know, that's great. I think that's what education should be about. Right? So in no way is that, I think, a negative, but it depends how you frame it. It depends what you do here in terms of fitting it into the vision that you've got. So I think that might be a pause and take questions if there are any. Yep.
You spoke about high school principals as a potential reference. For the application broadly, does high school come into any contribution there? How much would you weigh it?
Yeah, you're telling a story, right? And sometimes if you've been, if you got ducks of your school and you led a major Clean Up Australia campaign, I don't know, like, you know, that's part of demonstrating a commitment and a long-standing story about yourself. We'll come to referees later because I've forgotten the exact new, the criteria's changed a little bit. Yeah.
Do these four criteria change yearly or do they?
No, they have been like that since 1901. I mean, they have been interpreted, as I was saying, a little more generously. You know, I mean, 1901, Cecil Rhodes was selecting white men from the British Empire to build a super race of white men. Rhodes does not do that anymore. It has not done that for a long time. But the criteria were frames, you know, I think they used to have manliness in there, which they don't have anymore.
So the focus obviously is on telling a story. How, in terms of the extracurricular versus your degree, et cetera, which is different, is it expected that you're, you know, will apply for something that is within the field that you've already studied, or?
Not necessarily. You know, part of the story you tell should evidence why you're a good candidate to be invested in this manner, right? So when I say it's about telling a story, that also involves bragging, yeah? Particularly around your marks often, you know? What do? They show that, yeah? If you want to change track, that's fine. You've got to be able to have a believable and evidenced too, version about why you're changing track and what it's in aid of in the longer term. And if you've shown evidence already that you're doing those things, you know, it's not just sort of Oxford opportunistic, it's they're on the ground, there's a track record, it'll be much more believable. Yeah? Yeah. Hope that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So you have to write a personal statement. I think it's word limited. I think it's about 1,000 words. And that is where this will all be. That's really what sells the application. And you'll submit also a CV. And it would probably make sense to, you know, structure your CV around the selection criteria. Shock horror. And then your referees, which we'll talk about now. Now, obviously, before we talk specifically, the referees need to do different jobs. There's 6 of them, that's a lot. 3 are supposed to be academic, and I think one of them might be able to be your principal. So if you've done an honours project, it really makes sense to get your supervisor or the head of your department or somebody that can talk about what you're like as a high-level scholar who can talk really knowledgeably and intimately about your work. It makes sense for that person to be one of your referees. And, you know, if you've got connections, approach the dean of your faculty or the dean of your school. If that person can talk about your academic achievement in the context of others in your cohort, that's all really helpful to committees. But it really helps for that person to know you. Yep.
Often deans don't have a very intimate knowledge of your performance, so would you say that would be like the primary reference, and then you have like your academic supervisor for honours is another one?
Yeah, I think that's a good plan. But it's also a good plan if you are not necessarily applying this year but next year to start developing that relationship. And perhaps also there are people in your faculty who are not your supervisor necessarily, but who might go to the dean and talk to the dean about you as well, so that you're not just a random number. And that this is where you can do a lot of work now that will really make a difference in the kinds of reference that gets written for you. And look, seriously also, you're going to need references for the rest of the next 3 years. So this is really good work generally to do with referees. Then sorry. I think a diverse range is better, but I think people that know you and will speak intimately about you is also very important. So that would be a thing to weigh up. Yep. Yep.
So I just have a question in regards to the 3 academic references. I'm seeing the other 3 non-academic.
Yep.
So one of the references I was considering is my boss, but he is an academic. Is that an issue for you?
It's not an So we'll talk about the other three references. So, you know, the other three references need to kind of tick some of those other boxes there, the other selection criteria boxes. So your extracurricular activities, your community service work. Now, you know, if you are a medical student who wants to be a cardiac surgeon who has invented some kind of app that tests heart arrhythmia, so the heart arrhythmia app might constitute community service. You know, you're probably doing some residencies at the same time, maybe. So you're going to have overlapping people. But that's where you sit down with the list of names that are that you've got to choose from, and you talk to them. You go, if you could emphasise this bit, speak to the other bits, but I really need you to emphasise this bit. Like devotion to duty or whatever, that, you know, community service. I need you to emphasise this bit, and like, so that's where it's good to think a bit strategically. And yeah, there will be employers sometimes that fit both criteria, but you just think through how you get what you get them to say. Yep. Okay. Just check the selection criteria. Referees. So here are some advice for the academic referees, how they might situate you in connection to the rest of your cohort. And here is the character references, which, you know, speak to your non-academic qualities. I think it doesn't require here a principal anymore, which is good. But, you know, a principal would also be an appropriate person to include if you have a continuing relationship with them.
Could you explain the network advisors a bit more?
Yeah, sorry, I said I'd do that. Yeah. So the idea behind the network advisors, which was new last year, excuse me, is that there's a touch point person in every university who you can go to now and not just ask questions of, like, the ones you've asked here, but perhaps sit down and talk about your particular set of, you know, ways you meet this criteria, what you're thinking about. You could talk with them about that. And then should you be shortlisted, they're really great people to ask to help you convene mock interview panels and that sort of stuff. So I can't do that for everybody in the whole state of New South Wales. I'm doing that for people at UTS. And if you've got questions like the kinds I'm talking about, you should come and talk to me. Those people are not allowed to read your application. You can talk to them about it. And you have to tick a box when you submit your application saying nobody has read it and you've written it. So that's important to think through. But your network advisors will know that. And there should be one. There's a few more on that list that whose names have to go up because they've only appeared in the last few days. And I can send you them. The University of Sydney is in process of getting one. But Pip Patterson's office at the University of Sydney, she is the DVC Education, is the place to contact. And if you want a specific name, Susan Parker, who works in Pitt Patterson's office, I think is taking carriage of finding a network advisor. If you forget that, you can email Rhodes New South Wales, the general contact address that's on that website, on the Rhodes website, and they will give you her name. But again, if you've got specific questions about the kinds we're talking about, I'm more than happy, you know, please get in touch with me. So how many of you, just as a sort of, I think we're drawing to a close, I'll hang around for 15 minutes if you want to come and ask me questions individually. How many of you think you would be, might apply this year? Maybe half? And how many of you, for how many of you is this the last year that you're eligible to apply? Okay, great. Yep. So I would really encourage everybody, the rest of you, everybody, to think about two things in going through this process. One is that if you're at the younger end of the spectrum, that you might find ways to build aspects of your profile working towards an application in a few years' time. So think through these things when you're thinking about what you do with your time in the next year or two. And secondly, for everyone, look up those other scholarship schemes as well. Because, you know, 3 people get elected, well, you know, 10 people get elected from all of Australia every year for Rhodes, but the Monash has exactly the same selection criteria. So if you write a Rhodes application, you're crazy not to also put in a Monash. It's just that the Monash cutoff date's quite a lot earlier. So you've got to just be on top of that. It's passed already. So think about this process. I mean, think about it in terms of Rhodes, but think about it in terms of setting yourself up for what comes after your degree, because it really, if you go into a job interview with anybody, private law firm, God help you, you know, you're going to have to draw on stories about what you think is important, how you can evidence working in a team, how you can speak to those 4 selection criteria. So you're double billing, to use a law metaphor. So thank you all for coming. You're free to go. Thank you for coming to the basement of UTS. You know how to contact me, and I'll hang around for a bit afterwards.